The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to hour number two here on WGBB Sports Talk New York. My name is Chris Caputo. Tonight, I'm holding it down solo as Mike Padone is out and about. Maybe we can get a phone call from him later tonight, but we got a full night. We're going to start it off tonight in a couple of minutes by speaking with Anne Ligori, who is always down at the Masters. She's going to give us an insight of what was going on down in Augusta. We'll talk a little bit about her book and a little bit about her experience, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Yankees with Brian Palermo, and we'll finish it up with the Mets and John Hansen. So big sports going on as we just finished listening to umpire Tom Hallion, who was on there, and a lot going on in the sports world, including in baseball. Today was Doc Gooden's induction into having his number retired out at Citi Field. And there's a lot going on with also with hockey and basketball here in the area. The New York Knicks just secured the number two seed in the East. They're going to have to wait to see who they play. Maybe we'll get a little bit of time to talk about that later on. And also, the New York Rangers are in the top spot in the East in their conference, and the Islanders are sneaking their way into a playoff spot and possibly locking that down tomorrow night. Again, our number tonight, if you want to call later, we might have some time, 516-623-1240. Brian Graves on the other side of the glass. As here we are in Merrick, New York, chatting it up. So, again, we're going to be talking with Anne Ligori in a couple of minutes to talk some golf. Just to lead things off, we'll talk a little bit of what's gone on in the last couple of weeks. We were able to talk to a couple of college coaches. The UConn Huskies secured their back-to-back championship, which was unbelievable to watch a team win by double digits 2 years in a row every single game. For those of you out there watching, you definitely saw something what I would consider a dynasty. And then also for the women's side, I think the story was Caitlin Clark. But to watch an undefeated South Carolina Gamecocks, they were able to take on all odds and finish it off with a championship win. It gave a little bit of light into women's college basketball, and I think people started watching that. As a matter of fact, I believe they had an 18.1 rating versus the men only getting a 15 rating. Now, I take that a little bit different because the women played at 3 o'clock on a Sunday on ABC. The men played at 9:20 on a Monday on TNT. But nonetheless, good basketball. And now we kind of look forward to what's going to be happening in the playoffs, and that's the Islanders, the Rangers, and the Knicks. So I'm going to start off a little bit about the Knicks, and if you want to chime in later, you can. I think today was a tough day for the Knicks. They actually won the game in overtime, 40 points for Jalen Brunson. But they get the two seed, and now what that means is they have to wait and see on, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday, you're going to have the Miami Heat play against the Philadelphia 76ers in Philly. The winner takes on the Knicks. The loser has to play the winner of the Bulls and Hawks, and then whoever wins that game would then face the Boston Celtics. But I think this is a tougher road for the Knicks. I think if they would have lost today, the Bucks would have taken the two seed, and the Knicks would have gotten the three seed and played Indiana. Now, I'm not saying Indiana is much easier, but I think it's going to be a tough road. If you remember, the Miami Heat came out of that seven slot last year, went all the way to the NBA Finals. But we shall see. The Knicks last year, they did well in the first round, won 4 out of 5 games, and then kind of ran into a wall there. But this year, added some pieces, did lose Julius Randle, but OG Anunoby has been helping them out. And I'm excited to see where this lands. And, you know, this is the first time since 2012-2013 that the Knicks have finished this high with 50 wins. 50-32 is a really good year. You know, not so great on the road, 23-18, but they were a good team this year, finishing by winning the last 5 games. So I think by them winning the last 5 games and the Bucks finishing 3-7, Cleveland Cavs finishing 4-6 in their last 10, gave the Knicks that edge and they land in the 2 spot. So once again, Chris Caputo here tonight without Mike Guidone as we talk sports with you, WGBB Sports Talk New York. And we're going to talk a little bit of Mets and Yankees after the break. The Yankees are obviously on a tear right now with a tough loss today, but the Mets are trying to get back to 500, and we'll see where that goes. But a big day at the Masters, as Scottie Scheffler is the fourth youngest two-time champion at 27 years old to win the Masters. So we are going to be joined by Ann Liguori, who is going to bring us through some stuff, and I think she's on the line. So first off, Ann, are you there?
I am.
All right.
How are you?
Good. Glad to have you here. So right now we have Ann Liguori, who is the first woman to host a call-in sports show on WFAN Radio and also serves as the golf and tennis correspondent for them. And tonight we're also going to talk a little bit about her book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. Just a little bit of a background. I don't know how much Ann would remember any of this, but way back in the late 90s, I was an intern at WFAN, and one of my spots was Friday nights from midnight to 6 a.m. And I would help run the board with Jerry Recco, and Jerry would allow me to answer the phone calls, put calls on the air, and make some phone calls. And so I was able, Ann, while you were working there, to call people like Adrian Wojnarowski and Stick Michael at 3 o'clock in the morning. And get them to
guests, right?
You always did, and you kept them on, and they had no problem staying on. And I tell you what, you had good callers, too, and it always kept us going. So, you know, that time can be tough, but you did a great job of it.
Well, I'm proud of all those years I was hosting Hey Liguori, What's the Story for 25 years.
Those of you out there, you got to remember, that's the way it used to start. It used to start out with, Hey, Liguori, what's the story? And it stuck.
That's right. Very proud of the show. And, you know, I'm in Augusta, obviously, having covered the Masters for the last 10 days. Not only the Masters, but the Augusta National Women's Am and the Drive, Chip, and Putt competition. But I do know that Doc Gooden's number was retired today.
Yep.
And my very first guest on WFAN, on my Hey Liguori, What's the Story show, July 4th, 1987, was Doc Gooden. I got an exclusive interview with him. I went right up to him when he was back at that point, Shea Stadium. And he had just gotten out of Smithers rehab.
Oh, boy.
And I went right up to him, kind of bypassed the PR director. He wasn't happy about that. But I asked Doc if he could come on my show, and the radio station wasn't even on the air yet. I had to explain to him what WFAN was going to be.
Right.
And that it was going to, you know, go on the air in a couple of days. And I was taping the interview, and Doc said, absolutely, let's do it. So good memories from the very early days of WFAN, for sure.
And now you still host a show on Sunday mornings to mainly talk some golf. What's that like now?
Yeah, Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. This is our sixth season. I hosted Hey Liguori, What's the Story for 25 years, and I took a couple years in between. I was doing Sports Interview, my cable show, where I was, boy, that aired for 17 years. It was on MSG Network, and I syndicated the show around the country on sports cable networks. And then I was also an original host on the Golf Channel. So I was doing a lot of different things, and then I went back to WFAN and asked if they wanted a golf show. And they resisted for a while because it's really a football baseball station, but I hung in there and put together Talking Golf with Ann Liguori, and they've been airing it on Sunday mornings from April to September. So I'm very pleased to do that. I've come to the Masters. This was my 26th Masters. And there's nothing better in all of sport. I've covered Olympics. I've covered Super Bowls. I've covered World Series, NBA Finals, Wimbledon, U.S. Open, tennis. And I have to tell you that the Masters, there's nothing like it. And, you know, I just hope I can continue doing it for as long as possible.
Again, we're talking with golf reporter Ann Liguori, who, as she said, is down in Augusta for the Masters. And today, Scottie Scheffler, the father-to-be, first-time father-to-be, wins his second green jacket at the age of 27. Can you give us a little bit of, you know, how this week went? And let's just talk a little bit about him for a second. The number one player over the last 80 weeks What kind of superlatives or adjectives can we use for this guy now?
I know. He's just extraordinary. He is just so strong in every category. He's just so above and beyond the competition, and it's just great to watch him. And, you know, he just hunkered down. He didn't really look up. I asked him a question in the conference, the press conference room today after he came in, after, you know, the trophy presentation. I said, Scotty, you know, you looked down. You didn't even look up at all, even when you had, you know, the three-shot lead and then eventually the four-shot lead. You know, were you ever relieved or did you ever enjoy the moment? And he just was really staying in the moment and not really trying to get ahead of himself. And it was just interesting to watch. I mean, he didn't really breathe a sigh of relief until, you know, he made that last putt on 18 and just won, right? But he stayed in the moment. He, you know, that's really hard to do. You hear these pros talking about, you know, staying in the present. And yet when you ask them to explain that, it's hard for them to explain it. A couple of days ago, I asked them, are you born with that ability? Are champions born with that ability? Or do you develop that with experience? And he said it's a little bit of both. But he is just extraordinary in every way. And, you know, he's a man of faith. And, you know, he basically broke down a little bit when he talked about how important his faith is earlier in the week. And that's a big part of his confidence level and his play, because he says, no matter what happens to me on the golf course, you know, I just feel like I'm you know, somebody upstairs is watching over me, basically. And so his faith really plays into what you're seeing from him on the golf course and his overall persona.
Again, Chris Caputo talking with Ann Liguori here on Sports Talk New York. So today he was, at one point, you know, he did, I think, had a bogey at one point, and you would think, okay, this is a chance where you look at the leaderboard and it kind of got tight. But then he took off. So this is a guy who, when you think that things maybe were getting a little bit tight and maybe some of the other guys would step up, he actually took off and won by three strokes or more. So do you think, you know, this is, I think, only his fifth Masters. Do you think maybe it's just something inside of him that he has that inner, you know, attitude that nothing's going to faze him?
Well, you know, I can go through the whole round. I mean, he birdied three, he bogeyed four, he bogeyed seven, and then
after seven, he was on fire.
Yeah, he birdied eight and nine and ten. And that putt he made on nine was just incredible. It was a long, winding putt, found the cup. And from there, he went on. Now, he did bogey 11, but then he birdied 13 and 14. And at that point, he took a three-shot lead at 10 under over Oberg, Ludvig Oberg. And then he birdied 16. And with that birdie on 16, he had a four-shot lead at 11 under. So, yeah, I mean, champions, when they struggle on one hole, they don't think about it. They just go out there, and as they say, they stay in the present. And he hates to lose. And he was so focused, and he's just extraordinary. He was talking about how, you know, he's had the same coach for, you know, since he was a kid. And then they decided, Randy and he decided that, yeah, maybe he should get a putting coach. So they brought in Phil Kenyon, who is just a brilliant putting coach. He also coaches Matt Fitzpatrick and Keegan Bradley. And that's made a big difference, because for a while there, every part of his game was just incredible, but he was struggling on the greens. But Phil has made a huge difference in his game. And you know, now when he's hot on the greens, you know, you just can't stop this guy. I mean, he could win everything if he continues to putt like he's been putting. So he had a great season leading into these Masters. He was clearly the favorite. But you have to go out and get it done. And, you know, he's going to be a father, as you mentioned. His wife was not there.
Right.
She's due any day now. And he honestly was going to, if he got the beeper call that she was going into labor, he was ready to go. But he actually said today he didn't even think about that once. So, but he just can't wait now to get home and become a dad.
Sure.
And that's going to be, he did say that will be his priority now, sure, being a father over golf. So that will be interesting to see how he can balance the two.
Sure. So, again, you've been there for many, many years. And then this year, what other things stuck out to you? I know that the big topic, obviously, that always comes up the last few years is the LIV golfers. And I think there were 13 golfers in the field, including defending champion John Rahm and also Bryson DeChambeau. Anything stick out to you this year besides the winner?
Well, you mentioned John Rahm, and, you know, he was obviously not happy. He finished at plus nine. He shot a plus four today. You know, he won last year. And I just thought that he was just not happy the whole week. He was, I honestly don't think he's happy at LIV. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Right.
But he was talking earlier in the week about he misses playing a lot of these tournaments on the PGA Tour. You know, he won so many of them, and he missed not having the opportunity to play the Phoenix Open. He lives right there in Phoenix, and he'd pass by the stadium and see the stands, and he felt really sad and frustrated that he couldn't play. He missed not playing in the Amex to defend his title there. He missed not playing at Torrey Pines. Hey, he took the money. He left the PGA Tour, which made him rich in the first place and made him a star. He basically took the huge dollars and jumped over to LIV thinking that that might get the two sides together faster,
yeah.
But they are nowhere near a deal. They have been talking to each other, but I really don't believe I don't think they're close to any kind of agreement. So, and he's concerned about whether or not he'll be able to play the Ryder Cup.
Right.
So I just, that's what's, when you asked me, you know, what struck me this week, it's just, obviously, he wasn't playing. We haven't been able to see him play. I mean, I don't know how many people can really watch LIV golf and get a sense of how these guys are doing. But, you know, not only Rahm, but Brooks Koepka had a...
Yeah.
I mean, he made the cut, but he had a terrible... you know, he wasn't the Brooks Koepka that we've come to see in majors. So I just don't think these guys are playing enough matches and... they don't play four rounds. They don't play nearly enough golf, in my opinion. And I just don't think that, you know, they miss playing the best players week in and week out because they're, you know, the two tours just don't meet aside from the major championships now. So I don't think he's that happy. You know, money doesn't buy happiness, and I can't overstress that.
I do want to talk about your book in a second, but I couldn't not talk about the Masters without talking about Tiger Woods. And, you know, I know he had a few good holes here or there, and he had to play a couple extra holes on Friday to finish the first round and play the second round and make the cut. He called it a good week, but he finished plus 16, and he obviously is in a lot of pain with his back. And is he going to come back next year?
It was very historic in two ways. He made his 24th straight cut
right.
at the Masters, and today he played in his 100th round at the Masters, but he finished dead last.
Yeah.
He, as you say, he was plus five today, plus 16 overall. After he played, he did talk to some reporters, and he did mention that he's looking forward to playing in the other majors this year. Now, I can't see that happening, but, I guess he knows he just needs to get out and play much. I mean, before these Masters, he played only one round at the Genesis Invitational and six holes before he pulled out because of the flu, and he just hasn't played any tournaments.
Yeah, I just think it's hard to play the majors.
What's that?
I think it's just hard to play just the majors, you know?
Yeah, you have to get out there and play, and his body just can't do it. He just can't put in the practice time. He can't put in, you know, the tournament time. So look, he can say he's going to play in these major championships. I hope he can. But will he play? I think he'll play in the Masters next year if he can walk. I mean, the big question is, can he walk?
Yeah.
He's just physically broken.
Yep.
And so it's one big question mark.
All right, we're going to transition a little bit. I know you've been up and at it since 5:30 this morning, so... Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. I kind of took a look at a bunch of the chapters, and I've been trying to read up on some of the stuff. It's more of a book about 12 legendary players sharing their life lessons from golf and how it kind of goes into the rest of their life, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
You know, I'm reading...
I'm very proud of this book. It's Hatherley Press and distributed by Penguin and Random House. And it just really came out last week, April 2nd. It's 12 legends, 6 men, 6 women that I picked. They're role models. They're Hall of Famers. And it's really what they bring from their iconic golf careers to their day-to-day life. So it's extraordinary content, if I may say so myself.
Sure.
All the interviews are recently, our new interviews. They were all so willing to share parts of their lives that they haven't really talked about, that I haven't read or heard anywhere. And so I learned a lot about everybody from Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Tom Watson, Bernard Longer.
Yeah.
Ben Crenshaw. So I have those 5 Masters champions in the book, as well as Padraig Harrington, who is just brilliant.
That was funny, actually. He had a lot of good stuff in there, like a boiled potato, Irish humor.
Yeah, he was fun. He's so much fun. And he talked about embracing fear, that mm-hmm. not only is he nervous when he goes to play in a golf event, he has fear, which I thought was a revelation. I'd not heard that from him.
Yeah,
and he talked about how one can embrace fear.
Playing goalie on a team game, but then you're by yourself on a golf course. It's a little bit different, and the book really dives deep into a lot of things. I would say for me, one of the things was Bernard Langer and talking about his mom. That for me kind of was a big thing about how he maybe wouldn't exist today if it wasn't for some of the decisions she made. And then, you know, one of the other big ones, I guess, would be Jan Stevenson talking about sex appeal. But what was maybe your big one, that message that you wrote in this book that hit you the most?
Well, every chapter, all 12 legends have their own theme. Each chapter has its own theme, and they're all different, which is incredible. I didn't have to kind of coax them to say something different from the other, but they're all so important, really, lessons that you and I can use in our day-to-day lives. I mean, Gary Player talks about pursuing your passion, and who better than 88-year-old Gary Player, who plays golf every day, works out every day, is very conscientious about his diet. He looks great. He feels great. Nancy Lopez, her theme is positivity. And I think that's such an important message. It's so hard to stay positive, certainly on the golf course, because it's the most difficult sport out there. You're only as good as your last good shot. And sometimes good shots come few and far between. But also off the course, I mean, it's so hard to stay positive. You're having a bad day, or something goes sideways in a business deal, or something goes crazy in your personal life. It's easy to say stay positive, but it's so hard to do. But I think if we can all remember to stay positive, it's just so helpful. There's so many great lessons. Annika Sorenstam talks about there's no secret to success. She was telling this great story when she was 15 years old in Sweden and on the range practicing. It started to rain. So she called her dad and she said, "Dad, come pick me up." And he comes to pick her up, and they are driving past the range, and there's all these other junior players out there just grinding it out and getting pelted by raindrops. And her father said, "Annika, you know, look at all those other kids out there. There's no, you know, shortcuts to success. You should really stay out there and practice." And she said it just didn't sit well with her. She felt so uncomfortable that her father said that to her. And all those victories later, obviously, we do know that she put in the work, and her work ethic was incredible. But I think, you know, she learned from that point as a teenager that you really have to have a really strong work ethic to be successful. So a lot of great lessons, and it was just so much fun talking to these personalities and learning a lot about their lives, and all the themes are very uplifting and inspirational.
And you have a storyteller and sports commentator, Jim Nance, who wrote the foreword for you. How did that come about?
Jim's been a good friend of mine for a couple of decades now, and boy, what a wonderful guy. I saw him this week here at Augusta National, and I thanked him profusely for writing such an incredible foreword. It's about 3.5 pages long, and mm-hmm. he's just like that. He's just very generous and just a really good friend. So I've known him covering a variety of sports and hosting shows, and you know, he's just we have a mutual respect for each other, and I just can't thank him enough for writing such a great foreword.
Again, we're talking with Ann Liguori, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. She just finished another week at the Masters. Ann, I just was flipping through things, and we're here on Long Island, Suffolk County Sports Hall of Fame in May. Somebody's getting inducted that we're talking to right now.
I'm looking forward to that, too. Exactly. I'm hosting my 26th Ann Liguori Foundation Charity Golf Classic at Friars Head to raise money for cancer research. That's on May 29th. And then the very next day, on May 30th, I'm getting inducted into the Suffolk Sports Hall of Fame. So really looking forward to it. And, you know, I'm honored to be one of the inductees this year. I understand that Greg Giannotti from WFAN will also be inducted this year.
You got Keith Hernandez.
And Keith Hernandez, who's been living in Sag Harbor for many, many years now. So looking forward to it.
Yep. For those of you on Long Island, it's going to be out at Flower Fields on May 30th. A coach from Long Island, Brian Collins, who unfortunately passed away this past year from LIU Post in Stony Brook, will be honored. But Ann Liguori is going to be one of the people on the list. So you can look it up and find it. And this book, I would say, you know, one of the things I think I read is golf is a microcosm of life. You can bring it, everything in here you can bring to everyday life. The book here gives uplifting messages, maybe in a time when golf is being overshadowed by some of the battles with LIV and the, you know, between the players and different unions. So I would say if you get a chance, put your hands on this book. You know, it might be over 300 pages, but you're going to enjoy every story because each person gives a different message, and we appreciate everything that you put into the book.
Well, I appreciate being on, and again, it's me. You have universal themes. It appeals to all ages, men and women, and even if you're not a golf person, you're going to love the book because, you know, the stories are very inspirational, very uplifting, and as I said, the messages are important. Especially in these divisive times, not only in golf, but in society. So stay positive and enjoy the book, and it's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. And you'll be back at the Tennis U.S. Open this year?
Yes, looking forward to that, too. I can't wait.
All right. Well, we appreciate the time, man, and, you know, get home safe.
All right. Thanks so much.
Okay. That was Ann Liguori from the Masters talking about her book. Again, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. We appreciate her. She's had a long week, was up early, did her own show this morning, and we were able to get her on a little bit tonight to talk about the Masters and everything there. So we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. We'll talk some Yankees. We'll talk some Mets, and we'll finish it up. So we'll talk to you in a minute.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back as we hit the second half hour of our show here on Sports Talk New York, WGBB, 1240 AM, 95.9 FM. So, we are going to switch our gears. We talked to Masters with Ann Liguori. Appreciate having her on. And now we're going to talk some baseball. And the season has started. It's been 2 weeks. We got a little bit of a pulse of both teams. And we're going to start out by talking about the Yankees and welcoming in our Yankees reporter, Brian Palermo. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me back on. I'm really excited.
All right. So, last we had talked, Garrett Cole was not listed as injured, nor was DJ LeMahieu hurt. And both of them wound up on the injured list. The Yankees, however, are 12-4, have 5 series wins. How did it all kind of come about?
I mean, I started last conversation with talking about Juan Soto, and I think it all really, you know, starts with him. Just, I think the Yankees right now, they're third in the league in amount of pitches per plate appearance that they've seen. And they're really grinding these pitchers down early in the game and getting to the bullpen, and they're doing some damage. And I think it all starts with Juan Soto. Look at guys like Oswaldo Cabrera, who have really, you know, had a great start to the season, and he's been crediting Juan Soto. So I think, you know, that's where the conversation needs to start. And I know you had to bring up Gerrit Cole. That killed me a little inside, because I know last time I was on, I was talking about how basically you could pencil him in for top five in the Cy Young, and then within 12 hours, he was going for an MRI. So that one hurt. You know, you can call me a jinx, I guess, but at least it seems like big catastrophe has been avoided.
Well, you have to talk about it, and, you know, at least he has started throwing, and we'll kind of see where that eventually ends up. I guess you just kind of don't count on anything, or whatever he gives you is good, but I guess let's just take a look at Soto. Three homers, 15 RBIs, started the season out, throwing somebody out at home plate, hitting home runs, base hits in every game. I mean, there's highlights all over the place, and he's spraying the ball all over the field, too. So I guess you kind of have to be happy with the fact that he's versatile as well.
I mean, happy is an understatement. Like, I'm just ecstatic he's on the team. Just every time he's in the box, it's a must-watch TV. You got to stop what you're doing to see him. The amount of close pitches he takes and just his professional approach is unbelievable. I mean, the at-bat that sticks out the most is his at-bat against Josh Hader in the opening series against the Astros, and he gets like 97 up and away, and he just sprays it to left field to really help the Yankees win that game. And that's just the type of hitter he is. And then, like, yesterday, you know, you throw him a 3-1 fastball, and he's going to hit it 410 to dead center, and he's just a lot of fun to watch. So yeah, I'm enjoying every second of the Yankees so far.
And he seems to be having fun with the fans. I think he really wanted to be at Yankee Stadium, you know, had an incident where maybe he was signing an autograph while the first pitch was going off. But at least he's putting himself out there and saying, I know I'm a free agent at the end of the year, but I'm going to enjoy it while I'm here.
Oh, 100%. I know he has a big support from the fans on right field, and he's definitely enjoying it. And, you know, hopefully we can see a few more of him bopping it out to the short porch there.
All right, so Oswaldo Cabrera, 3 homers, 11 RBIs. Stanton, 4 homers, 9 RBIs. You can't be too upset with that, too, as far as what they're giving you so far, right?
Definitely not. I mean, Cabrera is just someone that you're really happy for. If you have any pulse on the Yankees, you know, he's just such a genuine guy, and he's always so happy. So, you know, when he came up 2 years ago, he had some immediate success, and then last year he was supposed to have a big role in left field, and last year just really didn't work out. So to see him having the success, you know, you really pull for guys like that. So I'm really happy about that. And Stanton, he seemed to get himself into some really good shape this offseason, so it's good to see him, you know, hopefully finding the fountain of youth again and really producing. But what the Yankees are doing is really impressive, considering I know Judge had a big home run today to make the game interesting, but Judge really hasn't been Aaron Judge yet, and Torres hasn't been Gleyber Torres yet. So they're finding ways to win, like you said, 5 straight series wins without some of their bigger players producing yet.
Yep, and that's what I was going to ask you about. Are there any worries about Judge 207, Torres 203, Verdugo 218? Any worries about average, or are you just worried about run production?
I'm definitely not worried about Torres. Torres is in a contract year. You know he's going to get it going. Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge. So, you know, he was hurt in spring training, so he didn't get as many at-bats as maybe he would have liked. So he's starting to just find it now. I mean, any Yankee fan who was worried about Aaron Judge doesn't know what they're talking about right now, and in my opinion, no, this guy's one of the best hitters on the planet, so you got to be patient with him. Verdugo, I mean, that's a professional hitter right there. I don't know him too well, where, like, I've seen, I don't know if he typically gets off the slow starts, but I'm not too worried about him. But, you know, in the outfield, if you do have a spot open, you know, don't forget the Yankees have Jason Dominguez coming back in June, so that's another guy you could plug right in there.
And, you know, they brought in Birdie right before the season started. He just went to the injured list. LeMahieu's not back, but he's starting to rehab. Any worries there about the third base position, or, you know, is Cabrera going to eat that up?
I think for now, you know, let Cabrera run with it, and he's doing a really good job, so there's no reason to change it up. But anytime you mention LeMahieu, like at the beginning of the season, that's a guy that you kind of penciled in to be the leadoff hitter. Before he was hurt last year, he was getting on base at like a 400 clip. But, you know, someone we got to shout out right now is Anthony Volpe. I think if the All-Star game was tomorrow, I think he's coming in second place in American shortstops behind Bobby Witt. This guy, he's been unbelievable to start the year. They already got him in the leadoff spot. He's seen a ton of pitches. He's hitting to all fields. So that's someone who he's really taken that jump in year two, and I'm really excited about him.
Yeah, offensively, two out RBI double off the closer today. He's batting .382. He's got 21 hits, two homers. I think you're going to see big numbers out of him. Any worry? I know there was some defensive lapses today. Any worry about defensively with him? I know they lost the game because of many things today, but any worry about defense with him?
I mean, he won a gold glove last year. I'm not worried about him. Torres had some, you know, he botched one there when Naylor was running home, but, you know, the infield defense let him down a little bit. Rizzo had two errors, but I'm definitely not worried about Volpe, but hopefully they can clean up that infield defense a little bit, especially on the right side.
All right, so the Yankees first lost in one-run games. They're 6-1 now in one-run games, which I think is excellent. A great way to start it off. Pitching-wise, we had talked about Rodon being a big guy. 1.72 ERA, basically only has given up two homers, and everything else he's been great. Nestor's pitched four games already. He's been, you know, so-so. You're getting what you had told me out of Stroman. Schmidt's been okay. Gill's been okay. So I think, for the most part, the starting pitching has been pretty strong for the Yankees.
No, definitely been a strong point. I think I mentioned this last time I was on. Something that Brian Cashman and his team is really good at is evaluating pitchers. Like Nick Birdie, he's been really well out of the bullpen. What was that?
Zero ERA in six appearances, right?
And he struck out a couple guys. He's got a wicked slider, and he's painting 98. So that's a guy who, you know, you pull for. He's been had some tough arm injuries in his career, so it's good to see him healthy. And like Cody Petit, another guy, he came up yesterday, and he threw six innings of one-run ball. And that's definitely a strength of the Yankees. Something we're going to have to keep an eye on, though, is Loaisiga is a big loss. You know, that's a guy you expect to be a two-inning guy and, you know, eighth-inning guy in close games. So that's going to be a role they got to fill as the season goes on.
Yeah, I think, you know, for the most part, again, we're talking with Brian Palermo about the Yankees. At 12-4, yeah, this team could be 13-3 after today. But with a lot of one-run wins, if you didn't have a guy in the back of the bullpen by the name of Clay Holmes, I don't know if you'd be in the spot where you are. He has been phenomenal. He has one save blown opportunity, but really, you know, you're coming into these situations sometimes and you really have no margin of error. He has a zero ERA. So I think with him in the back, the Yankees have become pretty much automatic in a close game.
And that goes back to my original point. It's like, you know, the Brian Cashman can just evaluate these guys. I know they got him from the Pirates for cheap and he's turned into one of the better relievers in the AL. And, you know, same with Ian Hamilton. This guy's been, he was out of baseball and they found him and he's been eating up big innings. So definitely confident in the bullpen right now. And I think that's that and, filling that late inning role is going to be something you can keep an eye on. Who's going to take Loaisiga's spot is something we can keep our eye on in the next few weeks.
Well, you got to beat up on the Marlins. You got to beat up on the weak teams. You got to get them when they're down. And I think the Yankees took advantage of some of that stuff. Just a quick outlook: the AL East. What's your thoughts right now? Orioles, Rays, Red Sox, and then obviously Yankees are at the top.
Yeah, that was my expectation, you know, coming into the season, seeing how excited we were this spring. I still think, you know, I hate to say it, but I think the Orioles are the team to beat. They have just, if you look at their lineup, some of their young players are just truly unbelievable. You know, you got Gunnar Henderson, Colton Cowser, they just called up Holiday, Adley Rutschman back there. They are just a stacked lineup. So, you know, I expect them to be fighting with the Yankees at the end. I'm a little down on the Red Sox this year. You know, they didn't do too much in the offseason, but the Rays, they're always going to be the Rays, so they're going to be tough. And, you know, the Blue Jays got good players too, so it's going to be a dogfight in the AL East, but, you know, I like the Yankees' chances.
All right, so bold prediction. Yankees go wire to wire in first place in the East, or at some point somebody catches up to them?
I mean, I know better than that. It's a 162-game season. I don't want to say they're going to go wire to wire, but, you know, come the end of September, I like their chances to be there.
Awesome. Well, again, Brian Palermo checks in tonight, gives us the Yankees update. We appreciate your time. We're going to have you back on soon. You gave us a great outlook the first time. Plenty of stats tonight. Yankees are 12-4 rolling, and we'll talk soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Brian Palermo talking Yankees baseball here on Sports Talk New York. We are going to change our topic in a second and head over to the New York Metropolitans, who are coming off a win. You know, it's a couple of series wins now. But things in Queens are always rainy, and there's always, you know, a cloudy day, and there's always something extra that people are talking about. Now, we're going to have John Hansen come on in a minute, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Mets. But I've got a couple of things that, you know, are kind of baffling about the New York Mets, okay? So the Mets start out the season losing 5 in a row at home, then win one and go on the road, and actually did pretty well on the road, and now have come back, and they've done a little bit of so-called damage to put themselves back in it. The Braves lost Spencer Strider, so maybe with some of the injuries they'd be okay. But I really feel like Steve Cohen is trying to put a lot of extra stuff at Citi Field. And it's not all about baseball. And you go to Citi Field and you see different stuff. Now, they've got the LED lights. So you bring in Edwin Diaz and you got the LED lights. And then all of a sudden this year, they started something out called the Queens Crew. And people could audition for that. They got like 19 dancers, hip-hop, all this stuff. And they come out in the middle of the game to give the crowd something to talk about. Why do we need more stuff besides baseball and people dancing on dugouts and all that stuff? Can't we just watch a game? We had a Yankee game the other day that started on the Eclipse Day at 6 o'clock, an hour and 58 minutes. People were mad that the game ended early. An hour and 58 minutes. Do we need extra stuff? If we're trying to speed up the game, why is there so much pomp and circumstance? I just want to go watch a game, hope my team wins, and not sit there in the freezing cold rain and chatting it up about absolutely nothing. You know, we don't need 67 pitching changes. Now, there are rules that I would get rid of, but we really don't need all the extras. I mean, sure, it's great to have, hey, what would you like to sing but in the seventh inning song, your karaoke song, have people QR code and vote. Sure, that's great, but we don't need all the extras. So tonight, we are going to welcome in our Mets reporter, John Hansen, to talk a little bit about the team in Queens. John, are you there?
Hey, Chris, how are you, pal?
Good, what's going on?
Not so much, buddy.
All right.
You don't like the Queens Crew?
It's got to go. I mean, we don't need all this extra stuff. I don't need dancers. I mean, it's bad enough I got to watch these people with the airsoft shooting T-shirts into the crowd and running out on the field. I mean, give me my, you know, take me out to the ball game, Lazy Mary, and let's play baseball. Like, that's it.
I did see that about the Yankees and the game ending early and, you know, people talking about
guys said they're telling
things open later.
People are telling their wives, I'm going to a game and now it's 8 o'clock and you got to go home. And it's like, you know, you thought you'd be out all night. For me, they've changed things up at John at Citi Field. They have redone the team store and the Mets Hall of Fame is now very, very limited. If you go up where the home run for the kids is, the wiffle ball area, there was like a season ticket office back there. They turned that into a very tiny Mets Hall of Fame. Not much in there at all, okay? All of those statues and the names and the plaques and all that stuff, after you take that elevator up from the Jackie Robinson Rotunda, they're all on the wall there now. And they're just adding stuff in just random spots. So you have to kind of pick and choose where you want to go throughout the game. Now, I just think it's becoming a little too much of a carnival there.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Now, the Hall of Fame, though, you know, Chris, in all the years I had been going to Citi Field, I certainly don't go as much as you. No one ever really was in that Hall of Fame. I mean, you could walk through there. It was like a ghost town every time I would go into it. So I kind of understand the idea of maybe not allocating all that space for it, but you do need to have some kind of presence. Because the Coens, to their credit, you know, they are trying to embrace the history of this franchise more than we've seen in years past.
Yep, and if you go to Citi Field, the new store is huge. They have a self-checkout now. There's no regular checkout. It's still a long line because you got thousands of people in there at the same time. But did a nice job. Got my Dwight Gooden bobblehead on Saturday. So a little bit excited. So give me an idea of your kind of up and down roller coaster from when you send me a text that says it's over to I'm back.
Well, listen, it's been 15 games, right? I mean, I think when you start a season out where you're kind of unsure what to expect and you start out 1-5, you know, people are going to hit the panic button. But I also think we have a little bit of an NFL mentality with all sports these days, where that the sky is falling with such immediacy in baseball. And the reality is, there's a long way to go. The Mets haven't even played 10% of their schedule yet. And I think if, you know, at the conclusion of that Detroit series, when they were, you know, 1-5, if I told you that heading into the Pittsburgh series before the West Coast swing that the Mets would be 6-8 and playing pretty good ball, everyone would have signed up for that right at that minute. And quite frankly, you could make a case if I told you, you know, before the opening day on March 28th that they were going to be 6-8 heading into that Pirate series, there'd be a lot of people that would have signed up for it. It's the journey to 6-8 that really had people bothered in the beginning.
Yep, 0-5. I mean, at that point, somebody asked me a question, will the Mets ever make it back to 500? And my thought was no. And here we are, you know, two Pirates wins away from doing that. But you also brought up one of the worst phrases I hate. I just can't stand, and that's the West Coast trip. Every time we go out there, we get destroyed. I mean, we're so stupid sometimes we fire managers after we fly them out there, but that's a whole nother story. A little excitement at Citi Field. You know, Doc Gooden, number 16, no longer to be worn again. But there are a lot of lows with the Mets, and let's get into them. Which guys are disappointing so far for you?
So I think obviously the easy answer to that is Lindor. But, you know, I did a little bit of digging around. And Lindor, he's notoriously a slow starter, notoriously. In 21, April, he batted 182. In 22, he actually had a decent March, April. He was batting 282. And then in last year, he started out April, you know, at 218. So he is a notorious slow starter. I think for, again, that 1-5 start, all eyes were on Lindor. People are looking for someone to blame. And, you know, without
he was batting
doubt,
038,
having,
though.
I'm it's horrible.
I mean, he was batting under 050.
Totally agree.
I mean, he's at 129 totally now. You know, he's got a homer. He's got a double. Like, yeah, he's got a couple of hits. But his defense is always solid. And that's what I think, like, people forget is – he's saving runs in the field. Eventually, the law of averages is going to say Francisco Lindor is going to hit. The problem is he's making $34 million a year to hit 129.
The problem, though, with that, Chris, is you can't get wrapped up in how much this guy's making. And I think that's what happens so much of the time, that people get wrapped up in his contract. Two things you go back to his contract. Number one, you know, the Mets were willing to pay it. It was Cohen's first big sign when he became owners of the Mets. And, you know, Lindor happened to be the beneficiary of that. So the other part of that is it's not like because Francisco Lindor is making the money he's making, it's going to prohibit us from going out and signing other people. So I think that people just have to kind of take a step back, forget the amount of money he's making, because would you be any happier if he was making $12 million hitting?
No,
you know,
I agree.
106? You wouldn't. So, and the other thing about Lindor, I watched his games, the
great
guy stands in front of his locker every day.
Every day.
Every day, answers every question. He plays every day. You could tell he was certainly moved with the Trey Turner reaction that he got this past week on Friday when, you know, everyone gave him the standing ovation. Which was great for him. He's a stand-up guy. And the other thing I would think about Lindor, you know, he was close to Buck Showalter.
I love Buck.
And again, I'm not saying this is the reason he's having a slow start. Again, he's a notoriously slow starter. But I do wonder if the change in the dugout, you know, has had a little bit of an adverse effect on him, because he and Buck were very close.
Sure. Brandon Nimmo, 13 strikeouts this year. I'm used to the 11 walks and all that stuff, but he's not putting a bat on the ball, not just against lefties, but righties too. What's going on there?
Yeah, he's had a slow start. There's no doubt about it. He, you know, batting only 216 so far. He just, you know, again, I think it's where he is in the lineup, not having a lot of protection behind him. He's getting, maybe he's feeling a little more pressure with Lindor behind him and Marte.
And that's why
that could probably be it.
Do you think maybe they change it up, put somebody else at the top, maybe a Marte? Or even let Lindor lead off. I can't see how you put Lindor in the leadoff, but is there any chance they change that up? Oh, and also, do you worry that the switch from left field to center field back and forth is hurting him?
No, I don't think so. He from what I've seen of Nimmo, I think he'll be just fine. I think he'll go to what his baseball card always does. The strikeouts are a little bit worrisome, but as long as he, you know, gets on base, he has 11 hits on the season. At the end of the day, we just need him to, you know, continue to work the counts, and hopefully as the guys behind him do a little bit better, that will help improve him as well. The one thing I would say about the Mets lineup that I don't love,
okay,
I feel like Alvarez is not getting enough.
Too low in the lineup?
I'm okay with too low in the lineup, but when he's not catching, can he please DH? Tyrone Taylor.
John, he was sore the other day. They couldn't play. He was too sore. He played twice in 3 days. You know, it's like these guys get paid all this money and they can't even DH on a so-called off day.
I mean, I believe Alvarez has to be. I believe if he's not catching, he should be DH.
I agree.
I mean, there's no reason. Now, when J.D. Martinez gets here, which God knows when that'll be, I know he's going to start swinging a bat. He's going to start swinging a bat.
He's going to get hurt swinging a bat.
He might. But, you know, I have a hard time watching who the Mets continue to send up at DH. I know DJ Stewart had a nice game yesterday.
Yeah, he's serviceable.
But
I like Tyrone Taylor. I like Tyrone. I will say I'm pleasantly surprised with Harrison Bader. I thought he was going to hit 065.
Yeah. Bader's been pretty good. He's been pretty good. I think his relationship with Alonso and vice versa is really good for both of them. I mean, I know historically you're not a big clubhouse guy and relationship guy that way, but I do think Bader and Alonso have a good chemistry. I think it's certainly helped.
Yep.
And Alonzo's off to a halfway decent start as well, certainly with his power numbers, and he'll be there. He'll certainly produce the way that he always does, and I hope that the two sides will eventually come to some sort of agreement, likely in the after the season. Hey, listen, here's what I would say about the Mets. All in all, I think they're exactly where we thought they would be within a game or two, and I think exactly where they'll play all season. I've heard the term that the Mets are trying to thread the needle this year, and that's exactly what they're going to do. I think if everything breaks right for them, they could win 86, 87 games, and if things sort of go awry, I think they could win 79 games.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of how they've played so far.
Yeah.
You know, the pitching has been better than you thought it would be.
Pitching's been pretty good. McGill got hurt.
Pretty good.
And you throw in Jose Budo, he looks like Doc Gooden, and Manaea had one bad start. I'm going to throw that one out. Otherwise, I thought he's done okay. Severino has pitched well. Quintana's been okay. And I'm even impressed more. So forget that, John. The bullpen. I mean, Drew Smith has been unbelievable. And I want to throw up every time he goes on the mound. Brooks Raley is just as good as he was before we re-signed him. And Edwin Diaz is going to be unbelievable the entire year.
He is. He's certainly, you know, talk about a guy that, you know, has totally rewritten his story in New York. I mean, Edwin Diaz will be a guy that people talk about that you can resurrect yourself when you go somewhere and you are historically bad to now being a beloved figure. But no, I totally agree. Drew Smith does always make you nervous, but he's answered the bell. Raley, again, very good. And, you know, most of the other guys out of the bullpen, for the most part, have been, you know, pretty serviceable and pretty good. But, you know, that to his credit, Stearns has always been a guy that can build a bullpen.
Yeah.
So you've heard about that from his time in Milwaukee. So obviously that is has translated a little bit over here as well. No, the pitching's been good. The pitching has certainly been better than be expected. And Buto, again, second consecutive appearance of six innings pitched. I think he will get the call on Saturday in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
Right now the Mets have they haven't named a starter yet, but I would certainly think it would be Buto coming off these last two starts. And, we'll see where we'll go.
And he'll probably stick around until Senga, which I would say is probably going to be June, because they transferred him to the 60-day DL. So I think he'll probably stick around till then. I will say this, John. I know you hate prospects and all this stuff, but the Mets had two guys, young guys, who both threw 10 strikeouts back-to-back days, Christian Scott and Dominic Hamill. I love both of them. They got electric stuff. I do want them up here, but I understand the Mets situation of not wanting to rush guys up.
Totally agree. I think you have to continue to let this play out. You take it series by series. You know, the Mets have 14 games left in the month of April. If there's any way that you can come out of April at 500, every Mets fan would sign up for that right now.
Yep.
And I think the more you can stay to that progression after each month, you will eventually see these guys, because there's no doubt that they are part of the future plans, especially when you look at all the guys going down now with Tommy John surgery, guys that you thought would be free agents next year. The Mets are going to have to, their starting rotation, the best thing about their starting rotation is they're all on one-year deals.
Yeah.
I think with the exception of Hauser, who I think we might have control of next year. So you're going to need those guys, you know, the guys that are down in the minors. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. They are certainly going to be a part of the future plans of this team, and I do think you will see them. And if you see Senga in June, I'd be impressed. My guess it'll be closer to the All-Star break, if not after the All-Star break.
All right, we'll see. But, you know, the Mets have played some teams that have good records, and they have good records because they played the Mets, but also, they played some teams that have good records, the Braves, the Tigers, opening day, the Brewers at 10-4, and now they're going to have to play the Pirates, 11-5. John, I think you probably think I'm over. This is a huge series for the Mets. Because
they have to win 2 out of 3, Chris. Totally
yeah.
agree.
And then at that point you're 9-9, go off to the West Coast, whatever happens, happens, and you come home and try and, you know, pick things back up again. But I think this is a test for the Mets, for Carlos Mendoza, to see what they can do, and hopefully the Mets will come out on top. So I appreciate your time, John.
Thanks, Chris. Good show tonight.
I enjoyed
the interview with Ann Liguori and your Mets, Yankees report.
All right, John, take it easy. Thanks for checking in. We'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, so we've talked everything tonight, from golf to basketball to hockey, a little bit of Mets and Yankees, and we've had a good time. So I just would like to thank our guests again. Ann Liguori, What's the Story, coming on to talk about her book. Brian Palermo talking the Yankees. John Hansen talking the Mets. On the other side of the glass, we had Brian Graves, and we had a good night. So I hope you guys enjoyed. We'll be back in 2 weeks on the 28th from 8 to 9. Sports Talk, New York. I'm Chris Caputo signing off.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.